I'm Rachel.
And I'm Jessica, and this is All Things Sensory by Harkla. Together, we're on a mission to help children, families, therapists, and educators live happy, healthy lives.
We dive into all things sensory, special needs, occupational therapy, parenting, self-care, and so much more. In each episode, we share raw, honest, fun ideas and strategies for everyone to implement into daily life.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Welcome to All Things Sensory by Harkla. This is episode 142, and you're listening to Rachel and Jessica.
We're so excited you're here. We say that every single time, and that's okay because we're excited every single time. And today we have an amazing conversation with Sonia Story, and you're going to love her. She's very inspirational, and she has a lot of knowledge to share.
Yeah, she is going to share all of her passion behind creating her Brain and Sensory Foundations course, and a little bit more about innate rhythmic movements and primitive reflexes.
All right, here we go.
Hi, Sonia. How are you today?
Hey, greetings. I'm really well. Thanks.
We're really excited to talk with you on the podcast. And before we get started on all the really good questions, we actually have five secret questions that we're going to ask you to just dive in so people know everything about you.
Five secret questions.
Yes.
That sounds great.
All right. So the first question is, what is your go-to relaxation activity?
Wow. Okay. Well, I would say walking in the woods.
Ooh. Oh, that sounds nice. Yeah. I love it. You live over in Washington, right?
Yes. So I'm very, very blessed because I can walk out my door and be in the woods.
Oh, I love it. Okay.
Yeah, it's lovely. And I also do some silent work. So that's really helpful for relaxation. Okay. And then also all these movements that we're going to talk about.
Yes. Okay. Next question. Would you rather eat jalapeno chips or Sour Patch Kids for every meal every day?
This is like torture. Yeah. Sorry, I can't stand either one.
Oh, no.
I'd have to like run away screaming. Actually, so I like jalapenos. If I can just have a tiny bit, then I'm okay with that.
Okay.
So, yeah, I would do the jalapenos.
Okay. Oh, that was so a good question.
So
yeah,
funny.
I'm not a candy person.
I wish I wasn't.
Oh, man.
I know. Cookies, I can eat a cookie every day. Multiple times a day. Not that I do that, but I could.
We wouldn't judge you if you did.
Yeah. I would judge myself.
Oh, no. Okay. This next question's a little bit more chill. What does your morning routine look like?
All right. So I wake up, I brush my teeth, I take a shower, I douse myself with cold water after the shower.
Oh, you do like the cold water immersion type thing.
Yeah. And then I put oil on my face and then I sit down and I do my quiet work. I just
Okay. You're going to share a little bit about that, right? During our interview?
About my quiet work?
I want to know a little bit more about it.
Sure. Yeah. I can share more about it. It's basically connecting with our creator and divine and what is alive in us.
How
it's tuning into unity consciousness and really working to give out love to the whole and compassion to the whole. And I find it to be really helpful and relaxing.
Okay.
It's like a deep way of clearing the subconscious so that you're actually functioning more as a living human being as opposed to, you know, what your personality or your ego is saying you have to do.
Would you say that it's like meditation?
Yeah, most people would think of it as meditation, okay. Although the way that I do it is specifically with the eyes open and being very active and paying attention. Probably the closest thing people would also think of, they would say, they might be calling it mindfulness, but I don't use that word. Okay.
Well, and you know, I think there's so many different forms of meditation. You know, I mean, going for a run could be considered your form of meditation too. You know, right. I think it's just a word that we throw out there, but...
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. I feel like so many people can benefit from learning about other people's techniques and mindfulness and meditation and strategies like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too. And, you know, for a very long time, I tried to do different meditation techniques and it was actually really challenging until I found somebody who really was able to kind of teach me how to do it. So it's nice to have somebody who's already who knows how to do it yes. to be able to really help you focus, because my mind was just going everywhere.
That's how mine would be too.
And a mile a minute or even more, you know, a mile a second sometimes with all these, well, I got to do this. I got to do that. What about this? And, oh yeah. I mean, you know how your mind can go crazy. It's like a, it can run amok. Yes. And so the reason it's important today especially is because there is so much of a history, a human history of trauma and challenges that are really extensive. And so to be able to have the mind be quiet is a much deeper relaxation, and it actually puts you in touch with who you really are, not just, you know, the mask or who you think you might be, but it puts you in touch with who you really are and your connection to all of humanity and to all that's living. And it's quite special and it's very relaxing.
Yes. Okay. We have one. Oh, sorry. We have two more questions. What are you currently listening to or reading?
Okay. So I have to turn the news off.
Oh, same.
Yep.
So I'm not listening to the news. No. I am actually reading a spiritual book right now called The Gospel of Thomas.
Awesome. Okay. All right. We have one last question. It's our most favorite question of all.
What?
And the answer is jalapenos.
It might be. It might be related to that, actually. I have a feeling. Okay, so it is. What is your sensory quirk?
My sensory quirk.
This is a sensory podcast.
Oh, gosh. Gosh, do I have to pick just one?
Yep.
Choose the one that impacts you the most.
So, what's that?
Choose the one that impacts you most.
I would have to say things like cigarette smoke and perfume really are hard for me.
So
really, really hard. And I actually used to get an instant headache and instantly irritable, like instantly angry, which of course I later learned was my fight or flight response kicking in. So I've been able to work on that a lot and it's much better. And now I just give out love and compassion when, oh gosh. And the worst one is fabric softener.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, that one's tough for me.
Okay.
So I'd say it's olfactory for me.
Gotcha.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Well, now that everyone knows your deepest, darkest secrets, tell us who you are, what you do, why you do it, how you do it, and all those good things.
Okay, well, I started this journey out because I really wanted to be a better mom, and I have been reading a book called Smart Moves, Why Learning is Not All in Your Head. And I was fascinated with that book because I started implementing some of the strategies in there, and they were working so quickly. It was the quickest thing I'd ever done to create transformation. And I was a young mother of two young children, and our oldest had sensory issues. She was very sensitive, hypersensitive. Our youngest was hyperactive. And so the two of them together were just triggering each other all day long, very different temperaments. And so, and I was in the middle of trying to go, wait, this isn't like the perfect family that I thought I was going to have. And I wanted to be the perfect mom and my kids would be perfect too. And oh my gosh, I had such a, it was a long fall from all that. But, and it was very painful to try and mother my children because I had my own sensory issues. I had my own, you know, challenges with my own nervous system. So when I started using the techniques in that book, we were able to like get out of arguments like so quickly because we would start doing different movements or positions. And I was utterly astounded and fascinating. So then when they got a little older, I was able to take quite a lot of training. I took years of training courses in innate rhythmic and reflex movements, in integrated movements. I have a background in biology and psychology, so I was already interested in how people function and what makes functioning easier, just because it's fascinating to me, but also on a very personal level. It was hugely meaningful for me to learn all these tools, and I just kept seeing them work, and it was just such a magical time to be able to do what I did. I was so fortunate because my husband and I just moved. We were living in Hawaii when I started reading that book. We moved to the mainland, and at that time, he was transitioning his career. So he was home with our children, and I got to go and travel and take all these courses. So I ended up taking over 50 courses and then getting my surgeons to teach a couple different movement programs. And about halfway through, I realized, wow, I'm learning from the best mentors in the world. And then I also realized, oh my gosh, so many people need this. Mm-hmm. And why isn't it more well known? And why, if this helps so much, how could it be like, why isn't it on every headline, on every news story?
Yeah.
Like somebody needs to get this out there. And then I realized like, oh, maybe that's me. And then I had to go through a lot. Maybe I need to get this to parents, because most of the classes that I was taking, they were for professionals who were already in the field. So I met lots of occupational therapists and physical therapists in when I was doing the training, and also educators and mental health therapists and special educators and sometimes vision therapists, speech and language pathologists. So it was a hugely fun time for me, and I've been having fun doing this ever since. So I feel very blessed.
Can you tell us the name of that book again?
Yeah. The book is called Smart Moves, Why Learning is Not All in Your Head.
I love that.
And it's by Carla Hannaford.
We're going to link that in our show notes so that people can check that book out too.
And I think I want to buy it.
I know. I'm going to read it after you buy it.
I know.
All right. Well, let's spend some time talking about those innate rhythmic movements. Can you share like what they are and why they're important?
Yes, absolutely. So they are part of the human template. And what I mean by human template is that all humans, when they are in the womb and developing in the womb and through birth and through early infancy, we have a template in our brain. It's a movement template, and it's innate, and it helps us produce automatic movements. So any child in the entire world, no matter what culture, as long as that child is healthy, has room to move, and is not stressed, and as long as they're placed on their belly enough and not in containers, then they will be doing all these movements. And that miraculous set of movements is what gets us not only from being a helpless baby to up and walking and running around and speaking, but it sets up all of our future skills, at least that I can think of. I can't really think of any skill that this system doesn't affect. The only one I could kind of come up with was, well, maybe intuition or insight, but all the other skills that you need, like being able to move and think and socially interact and engage with your environment, they all depend this initial set of movements. And the rhythmic movements are part of that initial set of movements. And they're innate, and babies will do them. There's even research of how they are connected with a baby's development of speech and language. So that's fascinating research. And what we see is, like, if a child is delayed in their speech and language, we can give them these movements. And then I've heard so many OTs and speech language therapists say that these children are making huge leaps in their ability to communicate and speak after they receive these movements. So that's just one instance. I mean, they have many other effects. Probably the most common and deepest effect is that they're very calming and nurturing, and they help the nervous system settle down, and they help us to sleep. But they also help to integrate reflexes, which is another category.
Well, that's what I was
movement.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to ask, is that the same thing? Are those innate rhythmic movements the same as primitive reflexes, or what's the difference?
They're not the same. They are more of a general, global, full body movement. The rhythmic movements are. And one of the very first rhythmic movements everybody knows is sucking.
Okay.
So, and babies will do that in the womb. And then there are many other ones that we see. And a baby is doing these all throughout their development. And then the end goal would be walking and running. And those are also rhythmic movements.
Okay.
And they're meant to keep us tuned and our brain active and our brain harmonized. And that's why we come with innate rhythmic movements. They're actually hugely important for our functioning beyond just the infant years. So then with reflexes, the rhythmic movements are a foundation for helping these reflexes to integrate. Not only because they're calming and soothing, but because they contain within them parts of the reflex patterns. So reflexes are different in that they're very specific, targeted movements. So what I mean by that is they're stimulated by a very specific stimulus, and then their movement pattern is also specific. So one that just about everybody knows is that if you place your finger into the palm of an infant, they'll grasp, and that's one reflex of many. And it's such a beautiful system. And if we only had in our culture the awareness of how precious it is and how we need to honor it and how we need to protect it, we would see a lot more children developing well and able to function with much less stress and much more strength and success in reaching their goals.
So I guess my question is, if the child is on the floor and they're going through these innate rhythmic movements as an infant, is that going to help progress them towards that natural reflex integration?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. And if every parent knew how to help that along, it would be so great. So yeah, the baby needs to move. Sorry, my mind went off into a tangent, but it actually is relevant. Where my mind went was babies need to move. And so we don't want to like swaddle our children past a certain age. And most professionals and therapists I talk to say, don't swaddle beyond 2 months. And they need to be on their bellies. And they need to go through as many children as possible as need to go through a natural birthing process so that, because the way that the reflexes actually integrate is through use.
Yes.
And there's a lot of them that get stimulated and activated at birth. And then when the baby, and ideally it would be a non-medicated birth, you know, all these things that support development. And then the baby would be placed belly to belly on the mom and get that opportunity to do the first crawl onto the breast. But for so many children, that's not happening. Mm-hmm. And so many are, their development is being interfered with in the womb and sometimes at birth and sometimes at early infancy. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, you know, this system, like I said, it really needs to be more honored and protected. Mm-hmm. And but then, if it's not, if like something happened and there was a trauma or there was, you know, something the parent didn't know, like, I didn't know it was not good to put him in the car seat. Mm-hmm. You know, how would you know that? Because there isn't, you know, that should be more well known, ideally. Mm-hmm. But parents can only, you know, that's the thing, is we need to really support young parents. But mm-hmm. that's another thing.
Anyway, whole other tangent.
Sorry.
Oh, I just said it's a whole other tangent.
It's another tangent, yeah. But if the baby gets these things, these movements, then they have their core strength, they have their ability to be aligned and upright, and they have the ability to interact with their environment in a way where they feel comfortable and safe, and they want to go out there and explore as opposed to being left in a state of, you know, immature vestibular system or immature nervous system. And then they can be more in a place of withdrawing and protecting themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's really sad because we want our children from a very early age to feel safe and comfortable so that they want to explore and their body and their nervous system is set up for exploration as opposed to withdrawal or overwhelm.
Yes.
Or fight or flight.
Yeah.
Well, we see that so often in our kids that we work with is they're so often in that fight or flight mode from the start. And we have to break that pattern and work on integrating those reflexes and, you know, incorporating those rhythmic movements is a big part of it. So I guess my next thought is, what's the evidence of the innate rhythmic movements, or is there any?
Yeah, well, there is a lot. You know, we have over 100, I think we're up to like 108 or 110 case studies, and almost every one of them, the therapists are using the innate rhythmic movements, especially at the beginning, because they're calming and children really love them. And we get such good feedback from parents saying, this is easy for me to implement, we can do it. And a little bit goes a long way, helping children calm down, sleep, and start to relax, because some children really have never been relaxed mm-hmm. from the beginning. And so there's a lot of anecdotal evidence and case studies. There are a lot of research studies like the one I mentioned where they're talking about innate rhythmic movements helping with speech and language. There's that. There are ones about crawling, which is also a rhythmic movement, and how that helps with memory retrieval for young children. And then there are a lot of research studies that talk about rhythmic stimulation in general. And they are showing that there is a lot of evidence that it's very regulating, which is not surprising, mm-hmm. and that it is very helpful for example, children with autism, people with stroke, to help get their gait back, people with Parkinson's disease. And so there's going to be more and more research, I'm sure, about rhythm, because everything that's come out so far has been really positive.
Okay, so you said you got started on this journey because you wanted to help your kiddos and you guys were struggling. So as a parent, you went through these movements and this primitive reflex integration with your kiddos. And how did that look? How did you work that into your routine?
First of all, I used everything that I was learning myself. And because I was taking so many courses, I kind of tricked my kids a little bit. I said, oh, I really need to learn this. Will you help me? And my husband also went and took one course that was like a whole week long course. And then he came back And he was doing it also. So I had some good support.
Yes.
Just, and it became like a real joyful family thing. I wove in a lot of play because I took some play shops too. That was another fun thing that I got to do, is learn original play from Fred Donaldson. He wrote the book Playing by Heart, The Vision and Practice of Belonging. Anyway, it was a really great time. But when I started learning all this, actually, because I ended up being fascinated by that book and things were working well for our family, I could see that I had issues. And so I was really using it on myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a helpful model for my children.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started doing it together as a family, which I really recommend that, because then you're not singling out one child to kind of do therapy or fix a problem. Instead, it's just like, hey, this is good for us. Let's all do it together.
Yes.
And so it's kind of like getting it in your routine, like brushing your teeth. And our oldest child was into it. She could really feel a big difference. Her anxiety levels were so much better, and her sensory issues were so much better. Her coordination was better. Her posture was better. Her strength and stamina was better. Our youngest daughter was also doing them with us. But then when she got to be around, I'd say around 11, she was like, I don't want to do that anymore. So I was really bummed about that, but I didn't push it too much because we had already seen really good results with her and I didn't want to push it. So I didn't. But then when she became 16 and she wanted to drive, I was like, if you want to drive, you're going to need to integrate these reflexes, because I know that you are not going to be as safe until you do it. So we made that agreement. She kind of grumbled through that, but she did it. And it's hard watching your kids go out and drive these cars.
Oh my gosh. I cannot even imagine. Yeah. My kid is 7 and I'm dreading the day that he starts driving. Yeah.
I know. Well, it'll all be okay. Just integrate those reflexes.
Right. So then actually, can we expand on that a little bit? And like, what primitive reflex did she need to integrate to be safe to drive?
Right. Well, so we had done quite a bit of foundational work already. And the main one that was problematic for her at that time was the ATNR, or asymmetrical tonic neck reflex.
Yes.
So that's the one, you know, and so many of these reflexes have to do with how our head is moving.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, if you are scanning the roads and driving, you have to turn your head. And if the rest of your body is moving where it should just be your head or your eyes moving, then it can be not very safe.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the main one that we worked on. And then I also worked with her doing rhythmic movements.
Okay. That's such a great, like, real life example.
I use that one all the time.
I love it.
I think that all of kids should have to be required to take a primitive reflex test, like in driving school. Like, hey,
right.
You know, we're going through driver's ed, we're going to test your primitive reflexes, mm-hmm. because if you're holding on to these, it's going to make you unsafe when you drive.
Right.
And so I feel like that should be, you know, built into the driver's ed programs in a perfect world. But,
right.
You know, we don't live in that.
Yeah, I love that idea. And really, all kids going into school should be screened and should get these movements automatically. I mean, actually, they should be screened much earlier because there's so much research showing that if you know what to look for, you can really find the red flags happening in infancy and toddlerhood. Mm-hmm. And if we can help children even at that age, it would be even better.
Man, I was even thinking like preschool, kindergarten, if you just integrate or incorporate these activities for integration into the classroom with the entire class,
mm-hmm.
5 days a week, like all of the children are going to be so much more successful. Can you imagine?
I would love that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really what needs to happen, because even the children... Okay, let me say it this way. So that is really what needs to happen, because there are so many children who are quote unquote neurotypical, mm-hmm. but they're really stressed also. Mm-hmm. It's just that they're functioning at grade level. They're not causing problems mm-hmm. and they seem to be doing just fine, but they have underlying things that are very stressful in their neurosensory motor foundation. They're not complete. Mm-hmm. So even though they're not as obviously troubled or they're not as obviously having challenges, they still need these movements. And actually, both of our girls were an example of that because they were doing fine academically. Like, it didn't show up in academics for either of them. They were fine. Mm-hmm. But if I didn't know what to look for, I wouldn't have been able to get them any kind of help. And it was really, by the time I found these movements and really knew what to look for and what to do, our oldest child was 12 mm-hmm. and our youngest was 5 because mm-hmm. they're 7 years apart. So yeah, they would have never gotten any help if I didn't know.
Man, I feel that same way. You know, my kid would be considered neurotypical, but I mean, he's got little things here and there, you know,
quirks.
Yeah. That we know.
Yeah. That we notice, but yeah. Someone else looking at him wouldn't notice.
No. Yep.
Right. And I found this out. I did a volunteer program in my community. We met at the library a couple years ago, and I did a program for parents and children. And these were people just coming from the community. These weren't kids who were special needs at all. They didn't have diagnoses. They came in, and it was shocking to me how many children I saw with unintegrated reflexes. Mm-hmm. And I remember driving home one day after one of these Saturdays and just going, wow, it's really like what Dr. Blomberg said. He's one of my mentors. And he even said to us in a class, he said, none of the kids are really integrating these reflexes because they're all being interfered with. Mm-hmm. And at the time he said that, I was so shocked. And I'm like, that just can't be true. But I found it to be true. Mm-hmm. And then I even told my students, and I said, this is really the reality out there, that the vast majority of children could really use these movements. And one OT wrote me back a couple months later and he said, Sonia, I can't believe it. She said, I tested this young boy in fifth grade. We wanted to know what the reflexes look like in a quote-unquote normal child. And she said, I couldn't believe it because he had really strong unintegrated reflexes. And I said, yes, I know. I told you that, remember? I told you that in the class.
Yeah.
That you're going to find, if you check, you're going to find the reflexes that are not integrated. So then she really got it. But when you first hear it, it's almost like you don't want to even hear that. You know, you mm-hmm. just don't want to hear. Because what it ends up being is that these kids are really in a lot of stress. And life could be so much easier for them if they only had this foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that it's really good to be aware of is that even if you had a perfect womb life, a perfect birth, and a perfect infancy, later on, if you get really sick or you have an injury or some kind of trauma, then this system that is supposed to be dormant at the end of the toddler stage, it can come back, or some part of it can come back and reactivate. And that means your brainstem is active and on hyper alert when it should be calm.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that makes sense to everyone.
Yeah.
I was thinking when you were talking about, you know, integration of these reflexes and when we should be, you know, testing them when they go to preschool or kindergarten. You know, Jessica and I are trained in primitive reflex integration, but the exercises and activities that we do with our kids, they wouldn't be fitting for an infant or a toddler. It'd be really hard for those younger kiddos to be able to participate in those activities. Even if we know that those young kiddos have retained reflexes, how can we work on that, you know, with those young kiddos who can't hold certain positions and follow these directions?
Or like if you think about the starfish exercise mm-hmm. and you are having to coordinate to that specific yeah. movement pattern for the Moro reflex. Yeah.
Right. So first of all, there's a lot that you can do with the rhythmic movements.
Okay.
That was my thought. From the very beginning. I mean, these movements can be for zero to elder and everything in between. And then for the actual reflexes, that's something that I teach in my course, where if you know the stimulus and the movement pattern, there's so much you can do. Mm-hmm. And so we go through different patterns and different modifications for individuals who aren't able to follow directions, because it's not just little ones, it's ones who are nonverbal. Yes. Or, mm-hmm. you know, not able to function in a way that they can actively follow directions. Yes. So in those cases, we really learn about hands-on techniques and how to give the stimulus for each reflex. And one of the things that is a question that comes up a lot from students, particularly students who have had other reflex integration courses, is there's a mindset that was taught, I think, years ago, and maybe still is taught, about reflexes, where you're like, if there's a certain pattern of a reflex, you're trying to teach the body to go in the opposite direction of that pattern. And so in that way, you would so-called extinguish the reflex or inhibit it. But what I have learned and found out and have tested over and over again, and it really works, is that our brain and our body respond to the actual reflex pattern. You don't have to train in the opposite pattern. You can use that opposite pattern, especially if something's really stubborn. But for the most part, and especially for the most part with children and even with adults, because I've been testing this with all ages, is that when you give the reflex pattern, it is super supportive and helpful because the brain recognizes it and goes, oh, okay, I know what I'm supposed to do with that, because it's already in the brain to know what to do with it. And the brain, if that reflex is not integrated, it's like the brain and the body are craving it to be integrated, and they need more of it so that it can gradually on its own start to become dormant. And then we're not so ruled by the reflex pattern.
It's all so interesting. I was going to ask you about your course, because you mentioned that you teach a course. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, so when I was taking course after course of these neurodevelopmental movement trainings, I kept saying, gotta get this out to parents. And so I thought, okay, what is going to be the most important thing for them to learn, or the most important, you know, the most useful, and the most, the things that are going to get the results, the most deep results and the longest lasting and the quickest results? So I kept asking myself that question. And I ended up synthesizing like the best of the best tools from the courses that I was taking, but also synthesizing tools that I was learning from the children themselves, because I would go and do these sessions and these kids were not acting like what I saw in the manual.
Right.
It's like, oh, what do we do now? Because like, you know, this child can't even hold this position. Mm-hmm. He's like flogging over, or it's like, there's no way this is going to work, you know? So I had to really go, okay, well, what will work? And what do I know about this reflex, and how can I use it in the position he's in? Because he's not going to get in this other position. Like, he can't do it. Mm-hmm. So then I just started synthesizing all those tools. Plus, my initial dive into movement as a way of transformation was through Brain Gym, which is what the tools in that Smart Moves book, that's what they're describing. And so I knew that there were processes in those courses, because I took all the courses to be an instructor. Mm-hmm. And I knew that there were processes in there that would enhance the reflex integration if we combined the two. And so that's what I did. I put those in. And then I also was taking play shops. So I knew, of course, with kids, you got to make it playful. You got to put fun stuff in there. And then I also added heart connection. So I just, it's like a synthesis of what I feel really works, and it's been tested over and over, and it does really work. To my surprise and amazement, it started to be mostly therapists that were coming to the course. And I was so happy and also quite intimidated by that, because I know these movements forward, backward, sideways in my dreams. I know these movements so well, but I don't have, you know, therapist background. Thankfully, I do have a biology background, so I do understand, you know, the terminology and things like that. But what I learned from the therapist coming to the course is they came back and said, you know, these rhythmic movements combined with the reflexes, they're really the best tools I've ever found for sensory processing issues and for emotional regulation issues. And, you know, I've been working with this child and the speech language, that therapist can't believe what's happening, you know, and things like that. And parents were saying the same things, like, oh my gosh, this child is so much easier to handle, and he sleeps better, and he's not so emotionally reactive and those kinds of things. So I have been really happy with it. It's a really good course. Plus, the other thing about it is that there's a lot of courses where they teach maybe 4 reflexes or 5 or sometimes 9. And in this curriculum, there are 22. Plus the rhythmic movements and plus the other tools that enhance the reflex integration. And those same tools from BrainGem also take the stress out of goals, which is something else that's really important, because especially school age kids, they've really learned anxious patterns when it comes to their goals. Like, you know, they want to read, they want to be successful reading, but because of the experiences they've had, like every time they open a book, they're already in fight or flight.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's part of the pattern. You open a book, you're in fight or flight. Mm-hmm. And so we have to have a way to train the nervous system out of that pattern and put a new, more supportive pattern in its place.
Yeah.
And so that's, and then there's another piece in there about heart connection, so that we're really present and loving when we are giving these movements as a facilitator, because that makes a big difference too. Definitely. For children to feel safe.
Yeah.
And I guess the last thing I would say about it that's really important, I feel, is that it's very honoring to the children. And very honoring in the sense of, like, really watching to go at their own pace. And it's harder to do that. It would be much easier if I just gave a recipe and said, here's what you do. You do 10 of these and 4 of these and 8 of these. And then you do this for a minute and that for a minute. It's not like that, because kids aren't like that. And some kids need 30 seconds. Some kids need 3 minutes. Some kids need 30 minutes. And so building them up slowly, if they're sensitive, makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think it's really important to individualize it, especially with these movements, because they are very powerful. Mm-hmm. And while some children love them and they'll just melt and ask for them, other children need some time to get used to them. And they actually need more movement because our nervous system is less developed, but you have to give it to them at the beginning in smaller pieces. Mm-hmm. So that's important.
Yeah, it really is, because, I mean, just reiterating what you said, all children are so different and we need to tailor our approach to meet their needs versus a one-size-fits-all system. What is your course called and where can people find it?
So the course is called Brain and Sensory Foundations, and I would love for your listeners to go onto the website moveplaythrive.com, and then you can check out the case studies. There are over 100 of them, and they're all written by students of the course, and you can check out all the details about the course there.
Perfect.
Okay. All right. Well, we are hopeful that our listeners will take advantage of the tools and the resources that you have dedicated so much time to creating and putting into one easy to understand bundle. I'm going through the course right now and I have my little blue book here, and it's so nice to have the visuals and the tools and the handouts that not only I can use with, you know, my child and my husband. We've been working through those, to be honest.
As a family, yes. As a family.
But, you know, clinicians as well. There's a lot of tools for clinicians to incorporate with their practice.
Yes. Yeah. It's a treasure trove of tools.
Yes, love it. It is.
I'm super excited. So before we wrap this up, what is like your number one piece of advice that you give to parents, to therapists, to anybody who is working with children?
My number one piece of advice would be to take the course, but yep. If we wanted to do something quick and simple, it would be get on the floor and play with your kids and give them lots of time in prone, doing games in prone.
Yes.
And for those who don't know what prone is, that means on your tummy or on your elbows, right, on your belly. So lots of that floor play. I love it. I couldn't agree more.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. All even right. Even older kids, right? Like that's not specific to just like infants doing tummy time, but I mean, older kids too do activities laying on your stomach.
Yeah, it's fun. You can even just get together and be on your bellies and roll balls back and forth to each other, yes, and spin around in circles on your belly, then go in the other direction. You can learn your spelling words on your tummy.
Yes.
You can learn anything with a rhythm, and that's helpful too.
Mm.
Awesome. Well, Sonia, we are so grateful that you spent this precious time of your weekend with us, and we cannot wait for our listeners to check everything out on your website and hopefully take your course. And if you guys do take her course, then tag us on your Instagram stories. We'd love to see that. Love to see those movements that you guys are incorporating, and check out the show notes because we'll put everything there for you guys.
Definitely.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me. I really, really enjoyed getting to hang out with you guys for a little while. It's been really lovely.
Woohoo! Yes.
All right, Sonia, thank you. And we'll talk to you later, okay?
Okay, bye.
Bye.
All right, everyone. Hopefully this conversation was insightful, inspirational, motivating, educational, all the things that we want all of our conversations to be.
Yeah, I love talking to Sonia. She just has a very like zen to her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just hearing not only her story, but her, you know, morning routines and everything that she does to get where she is just very, like you said, inspirational.
Yeah, this was a good one. So you can find everything that we talked about linked in the show notes of this episode. So make sure you go there and find all the things that she is sharing with the world.
Yes. And on that note, make sure that you are subscribed on whatever platform you listen to, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, all the different places. And leave us a review.
Please, pretty please.
Yes. Those help us reach more families, more therapists, more educators in need of this information.
All right, y'all. We will talk to you next week.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to All Things Sensory by Harkla. If you want more information on anything we mentioned in the show, head over to harkla.co/podcast to get all of the show notes.
We always have the show notes and links, plus full transcripts to make following along as easy as possible for everyone. If you have follow-up questions, the best place to ask those is in the comments on the show notes or message us on our Instagram account, which is @harkla_family. If you just search Harkla, you'll find us.
Like we mentioned before, our podcast listeners get 10% off their first order at Harkla, whether it's for one of our digital courses, one of our sensory swings. The discount code SENSORY will save you 10%. That code is SENSORY. Head over to harkla.co/sensory to use that code right now so you don't forget.
We're so excited to work together to help create confident kids all over the world and work towards a happier, healthier life.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week. Just a friendly reminder, this is general information related to occupational therapy, pediatrics, and sensory integration. We do not know you or your child. Therefore, we do not know any specific needs. Therefore, you should always refer back to your pediatrician and occupational therapist for more information.